Well, good evening. They say when I talk about the Ice Age, too, they say when I talk about the Ice Age, people get a chill. But when I talk about global warming, they get kind of hot. Hopefully, it won't get hot under the collar. I try to go by the data that's out there. Anyway, I'm an adjunct speaker for Creation Ministries International. CMI, it's called. They're based outside Atlanta, Georgia. CMI is in seven countries. They've been around for over 30 years under different names. And we've been putting out Creation Magazine for over 33 years, and the Journal of Creation, a more in-depth journal, for about 30 years. How many here get Creation Magazine just as a... Whoa. That's a high percentage. Anyway, as part of our information and equipping ministry of CMI, we have a number of resources we provide to you to equip you for the work of ministry. And I'm going to talk a little bit about this before I get into my talk. One of the main resources is our website. It's creation.com. And, yep, they're creation.com. And really easy to remember. You can get a car back there if you forget about it. This has 8,000 articles on it. It's all free for various ages, various scientific abilities, and it has a search engine because there's so many articles. They don't put the last 2 years' worth on there that come from Creation and the Journal of Creation, of course. We also have a free online newsletter called InfoBytes. The purpose of this, and by the way, this is international. CMI is in seven countries, so it goes all over the world. What they do is when there's some controversial topic and the evolution creation issue comes up in the culture, they will write a little one paragraph article and send it out, and then they will tell you to go look at the website for more information. So that's what they do. And so if you're interested in signing up for a free online newsletter, it comes out about once every 2 weeks. We have developed a method to sign up for InfoBytes. By the way, can someone go get those sign-up sheets back there? I forgot to recruit somebody. Anyway, we pass sign-up sheets if you're interested in signing up. So you just put your information on there, especially your email address. So as they're passing out some sign-up sheets, I'm going to start my talk. Oh, and here's how you fill it out. Put in your name. Okay. Anyway, my talk is Man the Cause of Global Warming? You know, this is a little different than this organization normally has speakers speak on. It's usually the creation-evolution issue. But there are similarities with the topic, as I will hopefully point out to you. Why should Bible believers even care about global warming? Or the environmental questions, for that matter? Yeah, well, it's God's world. We believe in the Creator. He created it. We should be interested in His creation. And going back to Genesis, we are stewards of God's creation. Although we have dominion, we are to take care of His creation. It still applies today. Genesis 2:16 says, "The Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to work it and take care of it." So that's why we should be interested in this subject. But I'll tell you, if you want to find out the truth about global warming, it's almost impossible in the culture. It's hard to find the truth on a lot of topics. And this is where it's similar to the creation-evolution issue. So here's a few hysterical statements from certain people. This is from the science czar, Obama's science czar, Holdren. But Holdren, affirmed one out of the mainstream position at his confirmation hearing by saying that 1 billion people could die by 2020 as a result of climate change. Oh, brother is right. Yes. There's even more. You can get a lot of these. And you know, I laugh at some of them. And here's one by a gal who's executive director of the Center for Biological Diversity, whatever that is. She said, global warming is the greatest challenge humanity has ever faced. It is the defining issue of our time. More than World War I, World War II? Oh, give me a break. And, of course, Al Gore says this, we are destabilizing the massive mound of ice on Greenland and the enormous, equally enormous mass of ice propped up on top of the islands of West Antarctica, threatening a worldwide increase in sea level of as much as 20 feet. Now, there's no scientist that I know of that believes that Greenland is going to slip into the ocean. It's kind of in a trough. And you got high elevations along the east and the west sides of it. Now, West Antarctica is more serious. When he wrote this book, no one was seriously considering it, even though they did in the past. But in reading the literature in Nature and Science, they're starting to kind of think maybe that could be realistic. So he's about half right on this. And, of course, that's from Inconvenient Truth, which, I hate to tell you this, but it's a book of propaganda. In fact, the movie, I can stop every minute or so and point that out, which I have done to people before. And, you know, how many saw the movie The Day After Tomorrow? Oh, yeah, a good many of you. It was based on this book right here, The Coming Global Superstorm by Art Bell and Whitney Schreiber. Now, I don't really know who these people are. I think one of these guys is a radio broadcaster. You probably know more about him than me. But on the back of his book, you kind of get a hint of how much these guys know about climatology. Uh-oh, I can't even read that. Oh, I have to turn around. I'm just going to quickly read this. Over several months, a potent succession of cold fronts will sweep across the world. Ever-increasing intensity and duration, damaging storms will batter the West Coast, spawning floods, mudslides, severe, deadly tornadoes across the country. Similar powerful storms will pummel Europe, sending millions streaming south in panic. This all happens real quick, by the way. Then meteorologists from the National Weather Service, who I retired from, will issue their most severe warning yet, a storm that appears to be larger and more terrible than modern man has ever seen before. It forms a virtually nonstop hurricane of snow and ice that begins to bury the northern hemisphere under an impenetrable sheet of frost. You know what frost is? It's that stuff on a cold night, below freezing, that's on your cars, you gotta scrape it off your... Okay, anyway. Anyway, not to be undone, Newsweek gets into it. Here's one. The hot zone, blizzards, floods, and hurricanes blame global warming. Can we blame all these storms on global warming? I'll have something to say about that soon. U.S. News and World Report, scary weather. And National Geographic, global warming, forest fires. We have to deal with these in Montana a lot, and you do in New Mexico, don't you? And Time Magazine, be worried, be very worried. And, of course, there's that polar bear up there, and you've heard that the polar bears are decreasing so fast they have to be put on the endangered species list, right? Well, Bjorn Lomborg, a Danish statistician, actually said, let's count them. There's about 18 zones of polar bears, and two were increasing, two were decreasing, and the rest were steady state. And the two that were actually decreasing was in an area of local global cooling. I mean global... I mixed it up. An area of... the areas where they were increasing was an area of global cooling. So essentially, steady state. Anyway, as Christians, we need to... I believe we should follow this verse from 1 Thessalonians 5:21. Examine everything carefully. Hold fast that which is good. You know, the Lord expects us to dig into these issues and not take things at a superficial level. When I got out of graduate school, I decided I was going to look into evolution below the superficial level and discovered that it hardly had any evidence for it. But the Lord has not led me to bash evolution. He's led me to answer challenges that they give us. So that's why I examine everything carefully. A great theme verse for research and for life. And I've been doing this for almost 40 years now. So what should we do? We should gather the facts, the real true facts. This is what we need to do in the creation evolution issue. 90% of the reading I do is secular earth science journals. And so I have to get the facts, the raw data, and I got to separate it from their interpretations, you see. I'm doing this all the time. So we need to do this in global warming. And I'm going to present this talk in a series of questions. We're going to look at the facts. We should be aware of bias, even in ourselves. We got to watch out for it and be objective as possible. And in this presentation, that's what I've attempted to do, and I've gone with the raw data out there in the literature as much as possible. So what are the facts? First, there's no consensus that man is causing all global warming and that we must act now. Some of these environmentalists claim that we got to act now, or in fact, some of them say it's too late to act now. So is there consensus? Well, Al Gore says this: the misconception that there is serious disagreement among scientists about global warming is actually an illusion that has been deliberately fostered by a well-funded cadre of special interests, including ExxonMobil and a few other oil, coal, and utilities companies. Well, I'll tell you, I don't work for any utilities companies, and I never have. So, is there a consensus among scientists? Well, Arthur Robinson has a website. He's from Oregon, and that's the website right there. And if you go along with his statement, you can sign it, like I have. 19,000 physical scientists have signed it, saying global warming not all from man and not an immediate threat. We have time for research and to look into it more. Of these, 2,600 are physicists, geophysicists, climatologists, meteorologists, oceanographers, and environmental scientists. These are people that especially should know about global warming and climatology, and they've signed on. So, is it a consensus? No. In fact, there's some well-known atmospheric scientists in high prestigious positions that are skeptical of that man's the total cause of global warming and that we must act now. One of them I'll mention, Richard Lindzen, who's professor of meteorology at MIT. All of these have PhDs and are well known within the field of atmospheric science, climatology, and meteorology. So it's not a consensus. Second, carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases like methane and ozone have increased since 1880. And here is the graph of the increase. Look at the total from the fossil fuels. Let's see if my cursor works. You'll notice on this that it was going up slow until right after World War II, and then it just has been shooting up ever since. So it has been increasing. We've been measuring it since 1959 directly, and we could indirectly measure it through proxy data from ice cores and tree rings. Now, let me tell you something about greenhouse gases. They're not bad for us. It's not a pollution. Water vapor is actually the main greenhouse gas that accounts for 95% of global warming. Carbon dioxide is a minor greenhouse. I think off the top of my head it's around 2%. If without greenhouse gases, we'd be 60 degrees cooler, and we'd all freeze to death eventually. I would do it sooner than you up in Montana. Now, carbon dioxide is a greenhouse gas, even though a minor thing. So if it's increasing, theoretically, it should warm the atmosphere by absorption of infrared radiation. So the major question is, how much? And that really is not known. And so what they try to do, they run these atmospheric climate models, simulations, global or hemispheric, where they will double carbon dioxide and leave all other variables the same and run it through 100 years or something like that and then see what kind of temperature change you get. I'll talk more about that later. That's what they rely on in this. But nature has done it for us. So actually we can tell, actually from observations, how much CO2 is warmed, which I'll get into that later too. Now, this might be a little bit controversial, but I believe that global warming is real, but it is small. The question really is how much global warming, and is man responsible for all of it, or any of it, or part of it? Those are the real questions. How do we know global warming has occurred? Because practically all the glaciers in the world have retreated since about 1880. Here's the Athabasca Glacier in the beautiful Canadian Rockies. It was out here in 1880 or 90, and it's retreated from that point. It was out near the road. Now, why did it get out there? Why was it out there in 1890? Well, because the little ice age before this 1880 caused all the glaciers in the world to advance for about 500 years. I'll get into that a little more. Also, sea ice in the Arctic Ocean has decreased. Here's the plot of it over the years. This is actually the latest information is from 2007, which it really went down. But when it really goes down, there's other factors that cause it to really decrease fast, like it did in 2012. They measure it in September. That's the minimum sea ice. And a lot of times it's due to circulation effects and other things that cause it to rapidly decrease. In 2008 and 2009, it actually increased 25% from that 2007 level. But then it took a real nosedive in 2012. So it is decreasing. And the official amount, according to Time magazine, of global warming we've had since 1880 is only 1.2 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, some of you might have thought that it was much more than that because of all the uproar it's caused. But no, it's only 1.2 degrees Fahrenheit. And there's reasons to believe that's exaggerated, which I'll get into. But notice the extrapolation. I'll get into that. That's due to the computer models that they run. And radical environmentalist, I'll call them that. I'm an environmentalist, but I think the radical ones don't look at the facts and just are have an agenda. They just take these numbers verbatim without understanding the nuances of models, of computer models. I'll talk more about that later, but the global warming is only 1.2 degrees Fahrenheit. And it's an interesting phenomenon that in the southern hemisphere, the sea ice set a record in 2012. The amount of sea ice around Antarctica has recently set a several all-time high records. So why is that? You know, I really don't know, but I know one thing. The global warming is mainly at night, in the winter, and in the northern hemisphere. It's less so in the southern hemisphere. It's less so in the daytime. And the daytime is especially a dangerous time to have global warming, period, because you'd have droughts if you warm temperatures up. I believe the claimed global warming of 1.2 degrees Fahrenheit is exaggerated. And to back this case up, I'm going to probably the top expert or one of the top experts on all the nuances of these temperature records, Dr. Robert Balling. I think he's either from Arizona State University or University of Arizona. I don't know which university, but he's from Arizona. He wrote in his book, the book called Shattered Consensus, but as this chapter makes clear, major problems remain. That's in the temperature records. First, the temperature records are far from perfect and contain contaminations from urbanization, distribution of measurement stations, instrument changes, time of observation biases, assorted problems in measuring near-surface temperature in ocean areas, and on and on. This could produce a total bias, a warming bias of 0.2 to 0.3 degrees centigrade, or about one-third of the observed warming. So you can probably take one-third of the warming off, so due to biases in the temperature records. So total global warming is probably about 0.8 degrees Fahrenheit since 1880. But Roy Spencer thinks it's more than that. He just wrote the book, The Great Global Warming Blunder, 2010. He says, our recent estimate is that as much as 50% of the warming measured over the land in the last 30 years could be spurious due to various indirect effects. Excuse me. Effects of economic growth, contaminating... Can I get some water, please? Contaminating the thermometer data. I'm not used to this dry, hot weather here. It's raining and it's been cool in Montana. I'm going to go with Dr. Robert Balling and believe that one third. What are some of the biases? Well, the urban heat island effect. Now, these people that work on these temperature records, like at the Climate Research Unit in the University of East Anglia in England, they have mostly filtered out the urban heat island effect. Like, for instance, Phoenix has warmed 6 degrees Fahrenheit over the last 100 years because of all that cement and concrete that absorbs heat. But it's known that small cities, they have not taken out the urban heat island effect. And even small towns have a slight urban heat island effect, and they've left those in. How many heard of Climate Gate? And there was a second Climate Gate, by the way, that I don't think anyone heard about that. But it's kind of died down. I like to poll people to find out where they're at and what they've heard. And I think one audience, I only had one or two hands came up about Climate Gate. So it's dying off. But Climate Gate should tell us a lot. What goes on behind the scenes? And this is similar to the creation-evolution issue, what goes on behind the scenes. First of all, they're tremendously biased towards warming. And they're the ones that are doing these temperature records. I think because of their bias, we need an objective group to redo them. And I think there is one that's doing it. I just read that there's a group that is re-going through all these temperature records and redoing them. Critics have been suppressed, kept them from publishing in the literature. They refuse to give them data when they asked. Things like this that are actually illegal in Britain. Advocates have tried to eliminate the little ice age of the medieval warm period. It's called the hockey stick flap. How many have heard of the hockey stick flap? Well, quite a few of you. What that is, if you get rid of those oscillations in the last 1,000 years and just stick with the global warming in the 20th century, the record looks like a hockey stick, straight like that and up like that. But the guys who did this were called on the carpet. And I don't know if they've rescinded or not. A guy named Michael Mann of Pennsylvania State University was the lead researcher on this. And he's even written a book just recently on how he's been persecuted on this. Yeah, he's been persecuted by global warming skeptics. Global warming deniers, as they sometimes call us. And maybe, you know, this tells me that there's even more bias than Robert Balling says. So I think I'm going to go along with Roy Spencer and go along with that half of the global warming is due to systematic biases for warming in the temperature records. So how much global warming does that leave us? 0.6 degrees Fahrenheit. And that's what we will live with. 0.6 degrees Fahrenheit is the total global warming. Oh, and getting into more biases. When you change an instrument, that changes a lot of things. I mean, we put in these new rain gauges once, I remember, and it caused about 30% less precipitation to be collected. And that might be about one quarter of your drought because of new instruments. And here's a temperature record where the previous 40 months, it averages that. When you put in the new record, it's about 0.4 degrees centigrade warmer. That would really put a bias in the records, right? And a lot of the instruments are poorly stationed now. Like this one right here, Hopkinsville, Kentucky. That's the official record right there. You know, they're supposed to be over grassy areas away from sources of heat. So that's a horrible place. And if they crank that up, they really get some global warming. Anyway, here's another bias. When the Soviet Union fell, a lot of their weather stations closed, and most of those were rural, and they're the coldest ones. So you can see the right here after 1990. And so if most of the rural ones, the cooler ones, not there anymore, Well, you got the warmer ones there from the cities, and so that's going to put a bias in the temperature records. And it's interesting, the satellite data, they've been measuring the temperature of the atmosphere, not the surface, from satellites. In fact, one of these global warming skeptics, John Christie, and also Roy Spencer, actually are in charge of the satellite stuff for NASA, I think it is. Anyway, at first it showed a cooling of the atmosphere, but that was a mistake. Some of you might have heard that the satellite showed a cooling, but they've been corrected. And that's what the satellites show. A lot less warming since about 1979 than the surface. And I'd say with all those biases, I'd kind of lean more towards this. And by the way, the weather balloons are with the satellites, weather balloons that go up and measure the temperature of the atmosphere. So the atmosphere is not heating up all that fast. It's going up a little bit. So the upshot of all this is that global warming is quite small. Fourth, there are natural cycles of climate change, mainly from volcanism, which causes 1 to 3 year cooling, sometimes globally if it's a large enough eruption, El Nino, which causes a 1 year warming, and oceanic changes, which are generally short-term, less than 30 years. They're still doing research on these oceanic changes, and they're discovering there are some cycles in ocean temperatures that affect the atmosphere and climate. So these cycles up to 30 years, in the Pacific Decadal Oscillation is one of them, and the sun. And I'm going to only focus on the sun, because I think this is mainly results in the long-term changes in temperature, or it's correlated. There's more to it. So on the sun, you have sunspots. There are cool spots. And we have an 11-year sunspot cycle. You can see it here. Now, sunspots are cool spots, but they're more than balanced by hot spots called faculae. So when you have a lot of sunspots, you get a little bit more solar radiation coming from the sun with high sunspot cycle. So you can use a sunspot cycle as a gauge of what the sun is doing, the heat from the sun. But there's a little problem I'll get into. The heat, the change in solar radiation is very small. So we don't really know exactly how the connection from the sun to climate, even though there's research being done. And that's why a lot of advocates of global warming dismiss this idea out of hand. Anyway, here is natural processes, and these can be correlated with sunspot cycles, by the way. We'd have the medieval warm period, centered about 1000 AD. That's the period when the Vikings settled in Greenland, had farmed southwest Greenland. The glaciers receded, and then they disappeared during the Little Ice Age, about 13, 1400 to about 1880, when all the glaciers in the world advanced. It's called the Little Ice Age. And there's documentaries that claim that a lot of horrible weather, like the one that caused the Irish potato famine, could be blamed on the Little Ice Age. Cold periods are not beneficial to humans. If you read about the Little Ice Age, you can read books and stuff, and I got a lot of journal articles I read on it. It's not a good time. Anyway, let's talk about the 20th century, when it's been global warming in general. Well, it hasn't been global warming in general. Here's the temperatures right here, kind of oscillating. It wasn't until about 1910 that we had quite a rise in the average global temperature. And that's when we had the Dust Bowl era in the Midwest. And then, believe it or not, we had a little bit of global cooling. How many know about that global cooling we had from about 1945 to 1975? Just a few of you. And then it's been warming since. Okay, carbon dioxide, here's the trace of carbon dioxide like that. After the war, it's been going up strongly. Here's a sunspot cycle curve? Which curve is more correlated with the temperature? Sunspot cycle. And here's the official records from the Climate Research Unit at East Anglia, the Northern and Southern Hemisphere, and global. Here's your little bit of cooling they have, and the warming. Notice one thing I want to point out in here. Since about 1998, there's been no global warming. How many of you knew that? Just a few of you. 15 years has gone by and we haven't had global warming. It's been oscillating about a mean, but it's been flat. You can draw a straight line across that. This is a little old, but if I extend it out to the current time, it'd be the same. I've looked at the latest records. So what gives? No global warming for 15 years while carbon dioxide is shooting up. You know, this is telling us that there's more to this than man adding carbon dioxide. In fact, some researchers reported, Nicola Scafetta and Brian West, March 2008 Physics Today, said this: we estimate that the sun could account for as much as 69% of the increase in the Earth's average temperature. 69%. Depending on the total solar irradiance reconstruction used. See, there's different reconstructions you can use. You've got to use ultraviolet radiation coming from the sun also. But I believe they probably used the best one. So they say 69%. Man only causing 31% of that 0.6 degrees Fahrenheit. So that puts it way down there. By the way, I'm more conservative than that, and I've been that way for 25 years. I'm just going to, because of the complications in this TSI, I'm just going to put it at the 50% level, and I'm going to say that man is responsible for less than 50% of the global warming, and natural processes of the sun are more. So at that rate, that 0.6 degrees Fahrenheit drops down to 0.3 degrees Fahrenheit. That's man's contribution. That's what I get from the raw data in the scientific literature. And it's kind of interesting that when you had that cooling from 1945 to 1975, you know, people believe the next ice age is coming, and so they wrote books saying it's coming, it's all around the corner. Here's one here, the cooling. This is copyrighted mid-1970s. I have these books. They make very entertaining reading after the fact. Has the next ice age already begun? Can we survive it? Woo! The weather conspiracy. The coming of the new ice age. And there's been a lot of protesters of global warming late with these big snowstorms that have occurred. Hundreds have attended this global warming protest. As the movement expands, thousands are expected to join before end of winter. Plans are being made for an even bigger turnout next year, depending on weather conditions. Yeah, there's been some big honking snowstorms in some areas. Number five, there's a strong bias towards the harm of global warming, ignoring positive benefits. Has anyone ever read anything in the newspaper or in Time or one of those, National Geographic, about any positive benefits of global warming? There are. They exist. And I think they're exaggerating most of those negative things they report. Here's four possibilities. Most people die of the cold than the heat. So if we have some global warming, especially in winter, we'll save lives. But I know some environmentalists think that's a bad idea. I don't. I think it's a great saving human lives. Carbon dioxide enhances plant growth. You know, more plant growth, better farming. Arctic shipping. You know, you save a lot of money shipping through the Arctic Ocean in summertime. And more agriculture farther north, like in Canada. A little bit more fleshing out of more people die of the cold. Bjorn Lomborg was a radical environmentalist that worked for Greenpeace. He's got a PhD in statistics and actually a professor of statistics at a Danish university. But he was challenged by Julian Simon to actually look at the raw data, since he was a statistician, instead of believe all this propaganda. You know what he did? He was shocked. And he wrote a book called The Skeptical Environmentalist, published in 2002, going through all these environmental issues, giving the real raw data. In 2007, he wrote a book just on global warming called Cool It. He says in Europe, as a whole, about 200,000 people die from excess heat each year. However, about 1.5 million Europeans die annually from excess cold. Those are shocking statistics. They must not have very good heating conditions in Europe. That is more than seven times the total number of heat deaths. So if we have some global warming, we're going to save lives. And this is his book, Cool It. Didn't show up well when I took a scan of it. And I belong to Montanans for global warming, and we meet every year. You might have a committee here for people from New Mexico for global warming. Okay, let's get serious on that. Sixth, the cost to fight global warming is huge, usually minimized by alarmists with little results will be likely. Lomborg has gone into this in great detail. And he shows that we can spend our money a lot better ways. Like, for instance, if there is a sea level rise, we can help those that live on the coast to adjust. You know, we don't have to. This is what he believes. This is in 2008. I'm sure it's more than that. He says, in estimating the cost of Kyoto, the largest assembly, the top macroeconomic model shows an average cost of about $180 billion annually from 2008. Of course, no one's going to satisfy this Kyoto treaty. In fact, the Europeans were really for it because they thought they can do it. But guess what? They're far from doing it. They're just in as bad a shape as we are to this. So I don't know what they're going to do in the future, but with Obama out there, I'm sure they're going to try to get something going. But if they get their way, just for that Kyoto, which is actually not very stringent, compared to what some environmentalists want done. But still, $180 billion, who would pay for that? It'd ruin all the economies of the world. So that's the cost. Seventh, computer climate models do not accurately represent temperature increase with a doubling of carbon dioxide, but alarmists take the results seriously. And here's how computer models work. Now we'll spend the next hour going through the details of this. But, you know, you have lots of variables, and they interact with each other. And it's not a linear interaction a lot of times, it's nonlinear. And we don't understand some of these variables. And we can't get them in the computer accurately. You know, all models are flawed. And, if you don't believe that weather models are flawed, you probably would have believed every forecast I put out in my whole career, wouldn't you not? I've been spectacularly wrong at times. Anyway, the worst variable is clouds. You can't deal with clouds. You know, they're various altitudes. Here's a quote from the journal Nature. Clouds constitute the largest single source of uncertainty in climate predictions. You also have the snow aging effect. Snow, the reflectivity of snow greatly changes from when it first falls to when as it ages. Also, ocean processes are not even hardly in the models. They have simplified ocean processes. Also, solar and infrared radiation are just guesstimated. That's a technical weather jargon, by the way, guesstimate. But you know, nature's run the experiment for us. I mean, carbon dioxide has increased about 30%. Other greenhouse gases, especially methane, have also increased. You can transform these other greenhouse gases into carbon dioxide equivalency units, which would add another 30%. So essentially, with all the greenhouse gases, we've essentially increased carbon dioxide 60%. Thus, carbon dioxide has increased 60%. But a 60% increase in carbon dioxide causes a 0.6 degrees Fahrenheit warming. You know, that's including man and nature. A doubling, which is 100%, will only cause a 1 degree Fahrenheit warming. So nature's run the experiment for us. We don't have to rely on these flawed computer models. And these models result in such things, they vary from 3 degrees Fahrenheit to 11 degrees Fahrenheit with a doubling of carbon dioxide. Nature says it's 1 degree. Even the 3 degrees is 3 times too much. They're greatly flawed. And, you know, the politicians and media, they take these things literally. They're way too sensitive to carbon dioxide in these models. Eighth, there are hidden agendas. Now, I normally don't deal with this issue, and I'm just going to throw out a little teasers for those that want to wrap their mind around it. Here is a quote, a quote from Christopher Horner in the Politically Incorrect Guide to Global Warming and Environmentalism. Global warming, he's talking about, is a perfect storm of demons and perils. This is from his preface. And the ideal scare campaign for those who would establish, quote-unquote, global governance. A quote from Jacques Chirac's words in praise of the Kyoto Protocol. He's the ex-president of France. With strict control over corporate actions and individual behavior. Here's another one from Roger Pelkey's book, which I'm going to talk about soon. The Climate Fix, 2010. Roger Pelkey is a professor at, I think, Colorado State University. And fortunately, in some cases, the issue of climate change simply adds weight to actions that those who are advocates that that man's a total cause of global warming and we need to act now, that they would support for other reasons. In other words, they're going along for this, along with this because they have other reasons, such as expanding alternative energy, which, you know, it's not a bad idea to do research on that, but they're much more expensive than coal and oil and natural gas, or redistribution of wealth. I'll let you just kind of think about that and have a good night's sleep. Ninth, claims of increases in storms is equivocal. I mean, this is one thing I especially hear in the news media and see in Time and Newsweek and even in Nature and Science, you know, the scientific journals. I used to have other data for this, but I just read Roger Pelkey's book, The Climate Fix. Now, his father is a professor of atmospheric science at the same university, and so he knows a lot about atmospheric science and climatology, even though he's a political science professor. So he's gathered all these statistics for all these storms. So his conclusion, over the long term, hurricane landfalls have declined. No long-term increases in drought. Peak stream flows, that's your floods, have not increased. There's no change in tornadoes or thunderstorms. Sometimes we have better reporting. And there's more deaths and property damage because we have more people, and people have built in floodplains and along the shores of Florida where they're very threatened. I mean, where they shouldn't be building. We've been telling them for years not to do that, but they don't listen. No long-term increases in East Coast winter storms like Northeasters, like that huge one that hit, when was that, October, November, something like that. And no long-term trends in either heat waves or cold waves. So the reason, I get asked this all the time, that the weather seems to really be radical lately. But you know, people don't read history. And of course, you know, people that don't learn from history are condemned to repeat it. They don't learn about all the huge storms in history. So, but when you add it all up and do that, it's, you know, you do have big storms now and then, you know, but it's generally a steady state for at least 100, 150 years. So, in summary, there's no consensus on global warming among scientists. Carbon dioxide has increased. Global temperature rise claimed to be 1.2 degrees Fahrenheit, but probably exaggerated. probably only 0.6 degrees Fahrenheit. Natural processes account for more than half of that global warming, so man's contribution is less than 0.3 degrees Fahrenheit. There's a strong bias towards harms. The cost to fight global warming is huge with little likely benefit. Lombard goes into that possibility. What would we do if we threw $180 billion at it? Very little. The atmospheric science is huge. It's you're not going to be able to really do much to it. Computer models exaggerate temperature effect of doubling carbon dioxide. But nature shows a 60% increase in CO2 equivalency units causes only 0.6 degrees increase, both natural and man-made. So that represents only 1 degree Fahrenheit for doubling of carbon dioxide. Actually, if you got rid of the natural process, natural part of this, it's only would be a half a degree Fahrenheit for doubling of carbon dioxide, right? And there are hidden agendas behind this advocacy of global warming, and there's no proof of stronger storms. A conclusion: we need more unbiased research, and we have lots of time. We're not going to all burn up. And the only place that we can live in the future will be Antarctica after the ice sheet melts, as one guy has said.